For November the 28th, 2025, we talk about Dispatch, Deadpool VR, Umigari, and much more. Welcome to Level 566. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Just the three of us tonight. And going to be honest, it's going to be a shorter episode.
It's going to be a cozy cast.
Yeah. No multiplayer. And yeah, maybe it's a few games we're talking about. And then some news stories, and that's going to be it. In anticipation of the holiday here. It's the holiday week.
Yeah.
We really just wanted to get on to wish y'all a happy Thanksgiving if you're in the U.S. and a happy I love you if you're in the rest of the world.
Yes.
And if you're in Canada, go fuck yourself. No,
you had your Thanksgiving earlier. That's what, yeah. You already had yours. Don't come back for seconds. Let's see, Ben, what's going on?
Yeah, not too much. I don't think I went to a Nordic festival over the weekend. It was kind of, it was okay. There's like, there's kind of Nordic roots in Seattle. And I think the reason why we think that this is, or there's like a kind of like a relation, is that like the climate is pretty similar between Pacific Northwest and like Nordic countries. But it was more just like a holiday festival sort of thing where it's like a bunch of knickknacks you can go and look at and try and buy. But yeah, and then we had, I guess coincidentally, we had our Swedish friends in town from Portland, so hung out with them for a bit. So yeah, it was a Nordic-filled weekend for me.
Any, did it affect the food that you indulge in?
We ended up going to a place called Fair Isle, which is like, they do more like Belgian type beers. We opted not to go to the one Nordic restaurant, which gets like completely packed, this time of year for the Nordic
sure.
festival.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
No. Well, what was the most Viking thing that you saw? Anyone drink from a horn? Anyone throw an axe?
It was kind of like more like Icelandic vibes almost, where it's like somebody was playing some sort of, it was like a metal glockenspiel type thing, while people sat in a very bland, like, atrium room and drank beer. So
okay,
maybe that
going for the winter depression Nordic.
Yeah, the different stands like had more like personalized things, like I don't know, like horse Christmas decorations, or like food, or like hot sauce, which I guess I didn't really associate with Nordic stuff, but it was really good. So I don't know.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I just got back from the Dayton Air Force Museum. We have everyone home from school and or work for the week. And so that was our like, let's do a daycation. Just, you know, get out for one day. And it was really cool. So this, you know, I've been to this in like middle school, but haven't been back in forever. It is four gigantic hangars just filled with all sorts of planes, from the earliest Wright brothers looking, you know, creations, all the way through to, you know, the relatively newest stuff. They don't have the new stuff in there, 'cause that's still,
yeah. It's our discussion of War Thunder. Yeah.
Exactly. We went to the same place. But yeah, it was super fun. And of particular note, they had, you know, a little display case showing like the top US aces from World War II. And, I was amazed to see that the best ace in the U.S. from World War II was named Richard Dick Bong. And I just appreciated that. I feel like our education system has failed me that I did not already know that. It feels like a very important part of American trivia.
I mean, it's a hero.
Yes.
Mr. Bong.
There's Mr. Bong. Probably a joke there with the other meaning of ace as well.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see. But yeah, so kudos to him for having an awesome name.
To his parents.
That's true. As far as we know. The awesome names continued though, like there's the Memphis Belle, I think, is like the famous bomber that You know, they had a whole exhibit for their crew and everything. And then there was a big bomber that had the front cockpit that was almost like entirely made of glass. Mm-hmm. Big bulbous, you know, meant so you could see down and up and all around. And it was kind of in a little bit of a heart shape, but blockier. And it was called the Strawberry Bitch.
Okay. Yeah.
And my oldest, he's like, Dad, why do they have bitch on the side of the plane? Or why does it say Strawberry Bitch on the side of the plane? And the intrusive thoughts won. And I just yelled, because it looks like a strawberry, bitch.
Okay. Oh no.
Okay. did like all the parents like just kind of like take a few steps away from you at that point?
I got a pretty good chuckle from another dad walking past. So okay. I counted that as a win. I think you heard my son's question too. So I'm at that stage with Luke. So it's you know, good times. But yeah, it was really cool to kind of visit that museum and look around. It was a rainy, nasty day here. So couldn't have asked for a better setup.
Had the kids been there before or?
I don't think so. If they have, they were taken by their grandparents when they were kind of too young to remember.
Okay.
My mother-in-law was a GE engineer when she was working. She's retired now.
Okay.
And so there are engines in those hangars that she worked on, which is super cool. Yeah. So I, you know, we kind of geeked out about that a little bit. So they may have taken them, but like as itty bitty babies, and it was more so that, you know, my mother-in-law could walk around and look at all the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I could see us getting back. It's not too far of a drive. Yeah. And yeah, so that was the big thing for today. Nice. We also, last night we went and saw Pentatonix Live do their, Christmas thing. I don't know if people are familiar with that a cappella group.
Okay. How was that?
That was a ton of fun. They, I feel like I always go to a concert for the first time seeing a band, especially someone that's like very like impressive vocals centric as an a cappella group. Like, oh, is it going to be as good as their recordings? Like, or is this going to be? And oh, they nailed it. Every single song was magic. So,
nice.
They were super fun to watch as well.
Neat.
Yeah. I just need to get them an air show and I can combine those two things.
Yeah. I don't, that would be weird.
You'd only catch it, you know, you get the,
Yes. Yeah. Wait a minute. In your mind,
like we need a little Christmas, I think.
In your mind, in an air show, it's all the audience members who are blasting over like a concert.
No. I was thinking, honest to God, the picture in my head is them standing holding them hands on the top on wing of a biplane.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Like, yeah. You know, 30s, you know, action star style.
Yeah, like wing walkers. Huh.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Make some high stakes pitch problems there, you know?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. On both ends.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, how about you?
I already said what I did, but I do want to make another recommendation that I thought of, which is I saw the movie Hundreds of Beavers, and I highly recommend people watch that. It's great. It's on Amazon. It was made by people who live in like Wisconsin. It's like a indie movie, and the closest approximation I can think of is it's like live action Looney Tunes, where it's like black and white. And it's about a woodsman who needs to get hundreds of beavers.
Okay.
Okay.
For reasons. Huh. But yeah, punches way above its weight. So.
Had never heard of it.
For some reason, in my head, it was like, oh, that's the sequel to The Lobster. It just sounds like it would be the sequel to The Lobster.
Or just one man becomes hundreds of beavers.
Just, you know, movies that involve absurd animals.
Yes. So I don't have an awful lot. So last week was my birthday. Didn't do anything crazy on the day of, just went out to dinner, with
you
family.
Aged.
I made this point to my mom. She was like, oh, do you feel older? So, well, it happens gradually over the course of the, I mean, I'm aging right now. The more I draw this out, the listeners are aging too.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'm really sorry if this is where you had to hear that. But on Friday night, Dennis, you and Moxie came over.
Yes.
Moxie, Moxie was in town and Dennis, you drove up and we just kind of hung out, got some pizza.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep. Moxie and I insistently and awkwardly sang happy birthday at the top of our lungs.
Yeah.
It's probably the highlight of the night for me. I'm not going to ask you whether or not, because I just assume it was.
Standing awkwardly in my kitchen.
And because you've got nothing better to do while we're singing, you're just like, I'm going to start cutting the cake. One
piece. I just did what I usually do when something's awkward was I just kind of stood there and just kind of like bounced up and down on the balls of my feet a little bit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah. It was really funny because like I had the lighter. So instead of handing it to one of you guys to light it, I lit all four of the candles that were on the little cake. And then you guys sang and then I blew it out.
Kay is such the mom of the group.
Yeah.
I wasn't gonna try to snatch the lighter out of your hand, but right. I was like, go for it.
So that was a tasty cake. The problem with it was that you guys got it, like the most colorful one. I think you said you wanted the gayest one possible.
Yes, and it was like, we got the gayest cake possible.
It was really brightly colored. And that does ridiculous shit to your output for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
A little alarming. I was prepared for it.
Because of the age that you're now at, you're worried about that.
That's just what it looks like when you're 38.
It's like a mood ring.
Everybody goes through the change. Everybody goes through the change. You start shitting blue.
That's the next stage of wokeism. First, you got the blue hairs, then you got the blue shits.
Yep.
I thought you were going to tell the story about the pieces kind of falling and we were starting a new global superstition.
Oh yeah, which is you have to eat the piece that most recently fell off to its side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you're cutting pieces, like just because of the way the knife moves and everything, mm-hmm. you might accidentally knock one onto its side or like knock a piece off of one. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, that's the one we gotta eat.
Yeah, otherwise you age a year.
Yeah, Ben looks so confused. I'm gonna have to draw like a diagram.
Nah, I can visualize that at least.
It was a small round cake. It was probably like what, like an 8-inch kind of kind of cake.
If that, yeah,
yeah, yeah, reasonable for three people. You know, with a small amount of leftovers, right? Just the way that I cut it is the pieces fell over, which. It's hard to visualize. I can see. So, no, but that was pretty much it. Otherwise it's just been work. This is a really busy time of year. Mm. Yeah. Got to do shows like this one and talk about games, like the ones we're about to talk about as we do the regular kind of show, with the grind and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new? It's not a visual show. Okay, I'm going to say Dennis. I noticed yours up first. You were waving your arm.
Yes.
Ben was just wagging his finger.
Yes.
As I normally do in this show. Yes.
Gonna make you regret going to video yet, at least while we record. Yes. So I got into the biggest new release in VR that I've seen in a while. I got Deadpool VR.
Oh, yeah. The one for the Quest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's MetaQuest 3 and 3, whatever the superlative is.
Yeah.
And this game is freaking hilarious.
Okay.
It is a, first person in VR game where if you pull from your hip, you pull out a gun. If you pull from over your shoulder, you pull out a sword. And then you just go do Deadpool things all around the level. It starts you out kindly on rails. So like, you're getting used to turning and shooting and all that stuff. In one of the funniest car chases that I've seen in a while.
Okay.
And then eases you into actually having control of your movement and running around as you kind of infiltrate / blow up a base
okay.
for your enemy. So this is an incredibly kinetic game. I did set it with like the, you know, the comfort protections or whatever turned off just because I do well in VR. But I can't imagine any version of this that someone who gets sick in VR would not have trouble with, because you are, you're jumping around, you're spinning, you're, you know, there's a lot going on at once. You are moving in relation to other things that are moving that are all, you know, it's crazy. And I kind of appreciate the game is just leaning into this. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a ton of fun playing through that opening level and, you know, fighting all the random enemies that are thrown at you. Deadpool is just constantly doing his fourth wall breaking humor.
And the visual style, like, is not just comic-y, like all of the like interface and call outs and stuff are comic book style.
Yes.
You know, yes. Like interjection kind of things. Yeah.
Which fits very well with what VR is able to do, mm-hmm. and able to do well in motion. Yeah. So the look of the game is great, and it looks great in motion as well. There were like one or two times where I would get confused about where I was getting shot from or something like that. But thankfully it's Deadpool who effectively, you know, can't die, has Wolverine's regeneration. And so, unless I like jumped into a bottomless pit or something obvious like that, I think there might've been one time that I died to gunfire. So it's very forgiving if you need to stop and get your orientation. But really the game seems to be focused on kind of killing as many people as stylishly as possible.
Okay.
And that is reinforced, not to spoil, it's at the end of the first level. Mm-hmm. You get sucked into a portal and essentially captured to be on the interdimensional game show of someone called Mojo.
Yeah, yeah. It's an X-Men villain. Yeah.
Okay. I had never heard of him before, so I guess those a little more informed on the X-Men front would recognize. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you're kind of forced to work for him. Effectively, you are going and grabbing other heroes to pull into the show, but also people are going to be watching you do that for entertainment.
Okay.
So I'm
watching a video and I see Deadpool straight up throwing Mjolnir around.
Yes, yes. Yeah. They haven't gotten to that part yet, but
yeah.
They are taking the fast track to all the dimension hopping shenanigans and combos and mix-ups that you might expect as Deadpool is going to not recruit these other heroes into an Avengers, but to recruit these other heroes to be forced into a, you know, a battle royale game show.
To do entertainment for Mojo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The real standout though, like I said, is the humor. The writing throughout is amazing. And it got to the point where like I was down to the last enemy in a room and I'm like, I kind of want to just chase him around a little to see what else Deadpool says.
Mm-hmm.
there's lines for everything. A great kind of caveat when they open up, like I said, you're in a car chase and the tech in your ear is a random person that it just so happens to be their first day.
Okay.
And you can imagine how that goes interacting with Deadpool.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of all the Deadpool movies. Those are probably the hardest I've laughed in a movie in a good long while. Mm-hmm. And this game delivers on that. To where, you know, being in VR and just kind of having to slow down for a second as you laugh and process the exchange that just happened is an interesting experience. But they do it very well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can you talk about like the structure of the levels? Is it mostly like room to room, shoot, stab like people and clear it and keep going places? Or are there any other like game mechanics on top of that?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to really lean into being kind of a smorgasbord is probably the Deadpool word to use, but like just a smorgasbord of fun, interesting ideas. Mm-hmm. So like I said, you know, you start out, you're in a car that's careening all over the road and shooting people. And then you're flying through the air and you're shooting people. And then, you know, you are, you unlock at one point, like a turret and there's like a turret shooting section. So yeah, I mean, your main verbs are shoot and stab for sure. And the levels flow a little more organically, at least what I've experienced so far, than a like clear room, move to the next room, clear room, move to the next room. It feels kind of like the organic level design you would expect in any first person shooter. Which is, you know, again, I'm moving around it with like fluid motion and fluid turning and all that stuff. That works really well. And I kind of appreciated like, okay, I can go at this like a full on, first person shooter style game. So I'm not being held back having to like move from node to node or what have you.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, here's why this pops. Like, here's why this is really good. This is developed by Twisted Pixel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know them from somewhere?
This is the Splosion Man people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like that goes way, way back. They've been doing some VR stuff, for a little bit. But their games are always pretty funny. The other thing that comes up in watching videos, like I was waiting for somebody to talk about this, before I got it because, you know, who knows? Deadpool stuff is hit or miss for me. I'm glad to hear you vouch for it, but also watching the video of this while you're talking about it, like Deadpool is like the commercially acceptable way to get any X-Men content. You know,
yes.
So like I'm watching a scene of Deadpool like fighting through a Sentinel factory, and I'm like, well, shit, if I'm going to do X-Men shit, I don't know. I might need to clear some space and fire this up. It looks really fun.
Yeah, that's they know where their bread is buttered. They know people don't just want to see Deadpool. They want to see Deadpool lampooning all the characters that they
love. I mean, just, you need a straight man, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or what's the opposite of a straight man?
Well, no. I mean, like if it's just Deadpool out of context, all of his stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
Without any, basically, Deadpool needs somebody with dignity to play off of. Otherwise, it's just all random nonsense. You know?
Yes. So, okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I have to say, I was really impressed with just the thought that goes into all the different interactions you can have. There's a boss fight, and they show the end of it in the trailer where like basically you fight this guy, you have to get him through all the stages. It's a little bit of a quick time event, but like, you know, he'll do an attack and things go into slow motion, and it's like, okay, I need to stab him here and then shoot him here, and then you also get a grappling hook, which all good games need a grappling hook.
Yes.
You know, pull him with the grappling hook here, and you like gotta do the right sequence, and then you kind of stun lock him, kick him into a helicopter that's on a landing pad. Mm-hmm. And you've basically got him pinned against the back of the helicopter, leaning his head in towards the rotor on the back. And I was like, well, you know, I'm curious because I, as a part of it, I had cut his hand off the QuickTime event, grabbed his hand, and just started slapping him with his own hand.
Okay. Was there anything?
He reacted. Yes, there was voice lines. Like, and this is something that you could easily have just gone and ended it and been done.
Seems like the most fun part of making a VR game, right?
Yes.
It's like, okay, well, I'm Deadpool. I cut stuff off. What if I pick it up and hit him? Like if I can cut stuff off and pick it up, the player is going to want to pick it up and use it. So like find as many use cases for it as possible. Like that is the heart of it. Yeah.
And they do that very well. You can have your own appendages blown off. And then, you know, you just lose the ability to pull swords or guns with that side until you regenerate. But you can also grab said arm with your other hand and, use that in combat. So it's just like,
that's pretty awesome.
It feels like they really thought through like, what would be the fun stuff to do as Deadpool? And like, how do you want to embody him? They kind of covered that very well and disembody him. Yeah. I also found myself, this was so weird. There's a little bit of talkiness as they introduce the whole conceit of like Mojo's game show, right?
Yeah.
To a little bit of like, you know, I've got it. It's like, I get the conceit. Let's get back to the action. Mm-hmm. But I think twofold, there's like, you know, you got to write to the lowest common denominator and just like, okay, make sure people can understand what just happened.
People don't know who Mojo is.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And then also it's a chance to write more jokes. To the, what was the, Secrets of Monkey Island.
Yeah, yeah. Just each of the dialogue options is an opportunity for two new jokes.
Yes. Exactly. So it felt a little bit like they wanted to shoehorn as many of the funny things they thought of mm-hmm. into a cutscene as possible. The good news is they are all funny things. The bad news is that makes for very long cutscenes.
Yeah.
They keep you kind of in the perspective of Deadpool throughout. And I found myself like emoting along with Deadpool's lines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah. Hands in my hair and scolding.
You find yourself doing that just even by, you know, you're not even consciously doing it. It's just your body does. What I desperately need in VR is the ability to skip lines of dialogue by firing a gun in the air. Right? Just signaling my impatience by bah, 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 bah. Like, okay. I'll move on to the next thing. You have displeased me.
Oh man. I mean, I would not be at all surprised if that shows up at some point in the game, because it's like that's the kind of humor that we're working with. It's been amazing. They have little collectibles hidden away through every level that you can look at, different Deadpool covers from throughout the years. And of course he's got funny remarks for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
Also just seeing some of the covers and being like, there's no way that's a real cover. That is too absurd Deadpool's riding a whale. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, but these are all actual comic books. I'm absolutely having a blast with Deadpool VR. Probably the funnest thing to do is to throw your sword, which it kind of auto aims that a little better than your pistols do. Pinning people against walls or, knocking people into each other, et cetera. Like there's some really cool stuff you can do tossing your katanas around.
Mm-hmm. Another mark in this thing's favor. It's cool that Neil Patrick Harris is voicing Deadpool. That's a very good fit. John Leguizamo voices Mojo.
Interesting.
Oh my God. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Huh. Now I need to get this.
I should have known that in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, my only warning is like, this is at least in the kind of base format, is pretty VR intensive.
Yeah. The spinning concerns me. I can do a bunch of stuff, but like, I can't, this is an Oculus Studios published thing. I imagine that they're pretty good about accessibility shit.
Yes. There were a lot of options that I had to turn off.
Yeah.
We'll say so. Mm-hmm. That's Deadpool VR. That's really the only new thing I have this week.
Shit. That's a hell of a new thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to, but fuck, my living room is full. You saw it, Dennis. My living room is full of boxes.
I've got needed motivation to clean, you got it. I just say, it's also probably going to be a shorter episode tonight. So like,
yeah. I'm going to
start
go to
that
sleep.
Download now.
I've been sitting right here at this computer for, for 12 hours. Yeah.
Oh my God. You need to get up and move around a bit then before you go.
Oh yeah. It's not been literally, I sat down. I do need to get up and move around.
Just try to twist your arm into buying it.
I'm not pissing where I stand.
Crossover where it's like, you need to move more. Go play video games.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've picked up VR as well.
Same for me, really. I use it a ton for iRacing, but I haven't played anything outside of that since the Demio board game one. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah. Good thing to come back to.
Yeah. Ben, you raised your hand as well.
Yeah. I'll segue to another superhero game that's new. And I've been playing Dispatch.
Ah, shit. Right. I downloaded that, installed it, meaning to play it. Then I fell asleep. I didn't fall asleep playing it. I just fell asleep as it was downloaded.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
Let's
ask?
Yeah.
You've been playing through, are all the episodes released now? I knew they're doing some kind of,
yeah, they're all released. I did kind of misspeak. I'm done with the game. So I've played through it and like to completion. It's maybe about 8 to 10 hours, I think, in total, because it's about an hour per episode and there's 8 episodes. And yeah, so I did it over the course of like 3 days. So I guess for people who aren't familiar with this, this is like made from devs who used to work at Telltale. So it kind of has the same DNA as like the Telltale type games, like The Wolf Among Us or Walking Dead. The difference is that, as the name indicates, it's a dispatch type game where your main character is in a fictional world that's like a superhero world, kind of like The Incredibles, but it's a little bit more like sardonic. It's animated, like anime style, and you work at a company where you're dispatching superheroes to different like crime scenes to get them to solve them.
You're like a 911 operator.
Yeah.
Sending them out. And that's the thing that makes this different from a standard kind of Telltale kind of thing, is that kind of strategy element.
Yeah.
Where like you need to match the right hero up for the job, and the choice is not going to be easy every time.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, to kind of make it more interesting than just send person here and like being a more of like a scheduling problem, all of the superheroes have like 6 attributes, like D&D style. Except it's things, it maps pretty closely to D&D, but instead it's like, you know, like speed, like defense, offense, intelligence, charisma, and one other thing that I'm not remembering right now. Mm-hmm. So there's sometimes things that are like, can be something that's unique to a superhero. So it's like sending a water powered person to a fire, for example. You might be able to leverage their like unique ability to get through a situation instead of it just being like a stats roll sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But like other dispatch games, like you can send multiple people to the same one. It has like a capacity of how many people you can send. And sometimes you can only send a single person to one. So if you've played a dispatch game before, it's kind of in that wheelhouse. I'll start with the compliments, where it's a very good implementation of everything that it does. So like for the dispatch part, it's a really polished dispatch game. It does a good job of mixing it up. So every time you're doing the dispatch missions, there's usually a wrinkle added to it. And it could be something that's informed by the story, or it could just be kind of like a unique event that's happening to kind mm-hmm. of make it so it's not so stale of gameplay. Like you're always kind of getting challenged in one dimension in it. Yeah. So the core gameplays of the game, there's the dispatch part. On top of that, the main character is, the unique thing about the main character is they are not a superhero. They are just a normal person who is kind of an ex superhero, like somebody who used to be a superhero just by like building a mech suit.
Mecha Man, voiced by Aaron Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Aaron Paul voices the main character. And they have an ability where they can hack things. So on top of this dispatching thing, either integrated in that or outside of that, there's like hacking games in it, where it's, you know, you kind of have a grid that you're moving around on. There's things you need to avoid, like bridges you need to unlock, like on a sort of graph thing. It's something where it's like, I don't know how well defined the like hacking genre of games is. I feel like it's less so than dispatching, but it's familiar enough that when you see it, it's like, oh yeah, I've probably played this sort of mini game before in another game before.
You are talking about dispatching games as if they are a well-known thing. Like, I know what you're talking about, like 911 operator. Can you give me like another example?
This is the Police is another one.
Okay.
Outside of that, yeah, I don't know. It might be fewer and farther in between, but
I just wanted to know if there were any other hallmarks that I was just like clearly thinking past. Right.
What's the bartender games? I would imagine this is has got
Like the
similar DMA
Nintendo too. One or whatever,
like the Valhalla, and I know there's another one that John
are you thinking of? Are you thinking of Nimble Strong, the mobile game?
I don't recognize that name, but maybe let me look it up. But it's where like you're not a dispatcher, but you're a bartender that like has to make strategic choices about what you're giving the people that come in.
Yeah. Oh, like a Overcooked kind of thing, or
no, closer to what dispatch actually is in play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess it's like the point is, I guess none of the game types seem overly like unique, or it's like they all seem like mini games that you've seen in other games like here and there, but they are good implementations of them, like when you're playing them. And the thing that's nice too is they're all like integrated really well. So yeah. It's like the idea is when you're not doing any sort of mini game, you're basically watching cutscenes, and the cutscenes will have some QuickTime events that are optional that you can turn on or off if you want. And then you'll also have dialogue choices, and that's like the telltale part of this game, where it'll be just, you know, simple responses where it's like they'll remember that sort of thing, or to more like pivotal decisions where it's like, hey, you need to make a choice here to do go one way or another.
And it's like you work in the office with the heroes that you're dispatching, and then there's also like other like office staff. A complaint that I had heard about this is that the romance stuff it felt like especially forced, like it was really, really pushing you into it needs to be one of these options.
If you're
getting there, that's cool.
That's kind of unfortunately like the weakest link of the game mechanics, at least I would say, is like the telltale type stuff, and that kind of leads into what the narrative is. But as far as like the mechanics of how it works is, it's, you're basically watching like a Saturday morning cartoon, but it's like not exactly an anime, but it's somewhere halfway between, like it's a stylized type version, but it feels like maybe like a Western anime of some kind.
It looks kind of like Invincible?
I was going to ask if anyone else has watched Invincible.
Yeah, I've not watched it, but it's got that similar like fine line. Kind of flat color.
I think that's a good comparison to this. Like the stylized, it looks like that. But the gameplay is integrated within this. So it's like, as you're watching this, like more or less cartoon, the main character might sit down at the desk to do a shift of like dispatching superheroes. And that's when it switches into the actual gameplay mode, and you do that. And then it'll switch back into the cartoon part of it, and you watch the end of that. Hopefully cartoon doesn't sound pejorative or anything. I just don't know a better way to describe the element. But
cartoon, non-derogatory.
the part that feels like gameplay-wise is the weakest is the choice system. And there's a couple different reasons for it. Like, as you were saying, some of the elements feel very forced. Not like the romance, it's like, you can kind of take or leave. But in general, it's kind of like, that's an example of a generalized problem where it's like, okay, in this chapter of the story, your character needs to make this decision. And it's giving you something that's like might be a dramatic decision that like feels like it gives weight to the story. So aside from the problems with choice games where it's like, you know, two choices that lead to the same path, what's frustrating about this is the choices that you have to make generally don't align with the character's decisions elsewhere in the game. And I'll just give a simple example that's maybe a spoiler for the end of the second or third episode. So not terribly far along, or I don't feel like it's a significant spoiler for anyone listening. But there's the team that you're trying to dispatch or whatever and trying to motivate. There's one chapter where they telegraph like, hey, you're going to need to fire one of these team members. You know, whoever's the least performing person, you're going to have to do that. So eventually you might need to make a choice to do that or choose something else in the game. But what's frustrating about it is like throughout the rest of the game, it'll talk about the importance of like being a team. And even if somebody's not performing, like you have to help them out and that sort of thing. But just for this one chapter alone, it's like, oh, but I'm going to fire this person though. Or it's like forcing you down this path that's like incongruous with the rest of the character development and the rest of the game. Yeah. The romance options are kind of similar too, where it's like, in this one, it feels more like, I don't know if it's a problem with the game design, but it feels more like male fantasy sort of thing, where it's like every female character is in love with you sort of thing. And then you like pick who you want to romance. I don't know if that's just like a staple of romance or of like romance choice type games. And that's just not in my wheelhouse. And it's like, this is something that's normal. And I just haven't played enough games to be familiar with it.
After playing Hades, I'm like, what do you mean you can't romance the guys?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some of that feels forced. I think for me, more so like thinking of the narrative of the game, I was really impressed with like the opening chapter or two of the game, especially the first chapter. The things that they were doing felt like they were really thinking a lot about the characters, the settings, and like symbolism throughout the presentation of the game. So just the example that I talked about with the main character being somebody who isn't a superhero, but has like a mech suit, and he's kind of retired and is no longer a superhero. Like that brings up a bunch of like interesting themes, like, you know, like what does it take to be like a superhero? Like, is it, you know, is that something that can be man-made, or is that something that you should be born with, like a nature versus nurture thing? Or is it like, is there things like imposter syndrome that this is talking about here, where it's like you feel like you can't operate at the same level as your peers, you know? So there's like a lot of interesting ideas that we're kind of stewing about, that felt like it was like setting up a lot of good things. There were a lot of good narrative choices that were kind of like making good surprises. Some other examples is like just the presentation, where it's like, there's a scene where after this, your main character has like retired, he's staring into the reflection of a glass, watching a TV conference that he had, and the glass shatters because someone's now robbing this TV store. But the imagery of seeing his reflection and that shattering in front of him is like, oh, that's like really great that they've like thought about this. And they're like, I haven't seen this type of stuff in games before, where people are like considering this and treating it like a movie presentation.
Yeah.
So I was really like jazzed by that sort of stuff going into it.
There was a drop off.
Yeah. I think the unfortunate thing is like kind of as the game progresses, almost like in a linear fashion, there's less and less of that going on, and it kind of becomes more like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I played this through to the end and I was like excited to see where it goes, but especially like the last chapter, was much more frustrated with like it either the choices that it gives you either not being important, like where it's like they're immediately railroading you and like you see it and it's just like, oh, well, okay, so you disregarded the choice I make. Or there being things that are happening in the story where it's like, well, I would like to make a choice here. Like your character's choosing something that I would not agree with or I would not do. And so like that sort of stuff was really frustrating. And I'm not sure if it was being done because I'm pretty sure they're like on track to make a sequel to this game, or they want to make a season 2 to it. And so I'm not sure if it's like, well, we need to railroad the ending so that we can start another story from this, and we can't just like have you choose anything at the end. But that sort of stuff felt frustrating because it's like, especially like maybe 2/3 through the game, some of the like emotional high points that they have where it's like, oh shit, I can't believe they did that, they seem to kind of go back on later and just kind of like, yeah, just kind of railroad you into a very basic kind of binary ending where it's like you might get two variations that are significant of what the ending could be. But outside of that, it doesn't really feel like it gives you a lot of interesting choices or makes good on the choices that you do make.
It sounds like a failure of narrative design as opposed to like story, right?
Yeah. It does. It definitely seems like that could have been better implemented. And, I guess the comparison that I had was like thinking back to The Quarry, where even though that's not like a perfect game, like at least the choices like mattered there. Like you can fuck up and kill your characters, and that has like a lasting impact for the rest of the game. I didn't feel any of that sort of impact, I guess, with the significant choices in the game. So that was kind of a point of frustration. Yeah.
You've kind of talked around the biggest anxiety I have about this game, which is the ending just a big cliffhanger set up for season 2, or do they actually like land the plane in a meaningful way?
There's a satisfying conclusion to the game, at least with one of the endings, but I think it's like there, you know, there's some things left unresolved, but it's a complete game in the sense of there's like an ending to it. So it's not like that where you're left like scratching your head or like really like waiting for the next iteration of this to come out. So it's kind of I guess like thinking of the quality versus like the price, it's like $30 new right now. It's kind of tough to, it's like if you really like Telltale type games, you would love this because this is a very shiny new implementation of it. And all the game features are pretty well implemented. So it's like that part I can't really knock it for, but it is kind of like more of like, it didn't stick the landing, I guess. And it didn't follow through to the end.
It's following the TV format, like right down to, the scrambles as the uncertainty about whether or not it's going to continue.
Yeah.
Comes up like it's just, we're bringing everything over.
I think one other minor like narrative thing that kind of was disappointing towards the end too is like they kind of set up a main antagonist in the game, kind of like the antagonist has like kind of like a gang or a group that you're fighting throughout this, But the group itself is like pretty underdeveloped. It's like, you don't really know why they're doing what they're doing. You don't really know much about them at all. And that's like kind of underbaked. And then the main antagonist himself is, you don't really know like how their mechanic works or what their motivation is. And like that, and what you are shown is like pretty minimal, where it's like, okay, I guess that's it. So it's like, that was stuff too, where it's like, given other parts of the game where it seemed to have like a lot of polish and a lot of like interesting character dynamics, it didn't really have that everywhere. And so, it definitely felt like this could have been kind of baked a little bit longer and like been a better game. I think I read some of the stuff behind the scenes where, the game company itself, they put out a trailer for this maybe like a year or so ago, maybe at the Game Awards.
It was revealed in an event like that. Yeah.
So part of why they did that was to get more funding for the game, because they were essentially, I think, running out of money at that point.
Okay.
And so I think Critical Role are the people who like helped fund them into the end, the YouTube channel, like the D&D channel.
Yeah, and a bunch of their voice actors are on the
podcast. Yeah, you got a Matt Mercer on there. Yeah.
So I don't know if that was like part of it, the dynamics too, where it's like, oh, we need to put something out, and so we'll take some funding, take another year, and put out what we have, sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
This is Matt Mercer's extremely expensive meet and greet with Aaron Paul.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, the voice acting, there is like solid talent here. Aaron Paul's really good. Jeffrey Wright does voice acting in this game, which is like, whoa, that's again.
Yeah.
So it's like, there are things that this game is doing presentation wise and production wise that I haven't seen in many other games.
Right.
And so there are some really good high moments in this game that I think like definitely extend like the potential for video games and like what you could do with it. By making them
more like a TV show.
Yeah.
Just finding new ways to marry the form, not making it more like, right? Because this sounds like more of a game than Walking Dead was.
Yeah, right? Honestly,
for sure.
They could have probably cut the choice system out of it and just made like dialogue responses that are like flippant, and it might have been a better game or might have been a better experience by the end of this. Just because of like how kind of weakly that was implemented, in my opinion.
So you mentioned like you can, once you send people out in the field, you'll get like quick time event choices. Is that are you like controlling the heroes as they're out there, or you're reacting to stuff that they're sending back to
you? No. Yeah. Those are separate parts. So like the quick time events will happen as you're like watching the show and like the cartoon part. And you might respond to that in certain moments. Same thing with like the dialogue. It'll pop up as you're like watching the show. The dispatch is its own like game mode. And that's like separate from that presentation. And so you're just looking at a map, sending people around. There will be dialogue and stuff like that going on. Like as you send characters around, and they'll like react to things going on. But it's not the same presentation as the other part of it. So those things are kind of siloed. Likewise, the hacking is also like a siloed event. So you might be like watching the cartoon portion of it, and like a character gets to a place where the camera's not on or something, and they might go into a hacking mini game and then jump back to the cartoon part. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So yeah, I think overall, like I would probably play a sequel to this if it came out, because I do think this has potential. The animation is really good. But I'm kind of a Luddite when it comes to that sort of thing. So I don't know if my evaluation's the best on that.
It looks pretty good. At least the style looks really good. I'd have to just play it and see it in action. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. There's potential here, but, this isn't like the 10 out of 10 game if people are hoping for it, but yeah, it's worth checking out. Probably I would recommend picking up on sale if it goes on like a decent, like 50% or more discount. So yeah,
it feels like being a new approach carries a lot here.
Yeah,
this is worth seeing, not because it was the perfect game, but because like they did something really bold and interesting.
Yeah, I hope the takeaway for like other games like looking at this is like, hey, we don't have to have like an overly convoluted game system. We can just make like a pretty polished like mini game that's satisfying, and we can make like a really enjoyable like kind interactive experience around that.
Yeah,
Are you telling me there's no battle pass?
I think there is a deluxe mode of the game on Steam, but I didn't look up to see what that was.
There's an art book.
Deluxe stuff is a soundtrack and an art book. Like it's
So yeah,
cool.
That's Dispatch. That's the only thing I've really been playing this past week. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Most of my play has been more Wasteland 3 for Watch Out for Fireballs. So that's coming up here pretty soon. I did stream two demos this past weekend on Saturday. I streamed three demos, but one of them was for a game that's been out for a year. So I'm not going to count that.
fair.
The first one is, well, I have caved and started playing a battle royale game.
Uh-oh.
What?
Well, I mean, by started playing, I mean, I played and streamed a demo for one. And by battle royale game, I mean, it is a battle royale game, but the mechanic is typing. Mm. Oh. This is a game called Final Sentence.
That's a good name.
Yeah. To find these demos, I just went onto the survival horror tag and went down to the, you know, popular demos playing now kind of thing. This is a battle royale game. The conceit is you are a person who has been kidnapped and taken to a Squid Game-like facility where you are tied to a desk. And there's a typewriter in front of you. There is a clock with 4 minutes on it. And there is a man with a gun and a mask standing right there. And you and 40 or you and 39 to 100 other people, you have to type what is in front of you in the in the time allotted, kind of like broken up into like little chunks whereupon you will get more time, kind of like added in. It's like a checkpoint system. And within like the like little chunks or paragraphs to which it is divided, if you make three mistakes when you make three mistakes, you go into a Russian roulette mode, and the person with the gun who's standing by your desk, you know, spins the cylinder, and then pulls the trigger. And if you're lucky, you keep going on. If you're unlucky, your game ends there. And each time you enter Russian roulette, another bullet is added, up until six. No. Yeah.
I just want to say in the trailer for this game, I love the wide shot of a bunch of people in trench coats blowing away people at typewriters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a vibe.
So in the demo, I think you can get up to like level, like, you know, player level 10. It's kind of absurd a little bit the way it's tracking your stats, and you have little like mini like missions within them to get achievements or whatever. It's a little bit much for a typing game. But yeah, it is tense, and you do end up like, I was half kind of thrown by the the pressure to type quickly, because you can see like at the top what your position is, and only the person who finishes everything first survives, right?
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Does that mean ultimately, even if you make no mistakes but you go too slow, you're dead anyway?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Huh.
Do you see the Guam of the people who are in the lead?
The what?
It's like words per minute. That's what we said in high school when we were doing typing class.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think you do. You see your own like maximum words per minute and like your average and your high and low and stuff like that. Mm. So it was like half like I was fucking up because of pressure, and then half like they were actually throwing challenging things at me. You know, like like here's just a bunch of typing exercises, you know, just combinations. It's not actually words that you're hitting, as ways to vary up the difficulty and things. It's neat. I don't see it having a lot of legs, because ultimately it is a typing game.
Yeah. Is there any kind of like break the game kind of stuff going on in this? Like the,
an inscription kind of. Yeah. I don't know.
Watching the trailer right around the 30-second mark, it's everyone's firing the guns because people have made mistakes or whatever, and it looks like one person, guy in a trench coat, fires the gun at an overtly empty desk. Almost like the person has gotten away. Now that could just be the camera angle, but the second I saw that, I was like, that would be interesting.
Nothing that I saw in the demo alluded to that being a possibility. that doesn't mean it's not fair, but I do not know how that stays within the Battle Royale format, unless there's a point where you just abandon that and leave the competition.
Could be like a group level break the game. Mm-hmm. Like y'all got to co-op together.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what this is doing, but that would be a very interesting idea.
Yeah. There's also voice chat, which I can see as a way to fuck people up, but it would be very easy to fuck people up just by saying letters randomly.
Oh no.
So yeah.
I like, so from the shot I can see the lines that you're typing, I see press F to pay respects. One does not simply walk into Mordor.
Yeah.
And hide your kids, hide your wife.
Yeah. So it's like mixing, like it's mixes of stuff like that. And it's mixes of things that are like creepy prose or poetry describing the situation. As you
interesting.
Play. Yeah. This seems like a neat experiment. I do not know if I'll be picking up the full version of it, but regardless, like, I don't know, demo's neat. So I would not have expected to see a game with that remit, and suddenly here we are. It's there.
It's good that there's an ecosystem where stuff like this can be found.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool that people are trying stuff. Like this, this studio doesn't seem to have done a bunch of other stuff. So, or I guess their studio page just links straight to the publisher page. So this is really, really new. Yeah. The other game that I have been playing is called Umigari.
Okay.
This is a demo for a game that I just now I'm realizing by looking at the page, this is made by Chilla's Art. This is the Japanese developer who, prior to this, has been doing primarily like small, like kind of like one sitting, like walking sim horror games. Like I'd done like
They've got a lot of them too.
Yes, yeah. I had done like Parasocial, The Convenience Store. I had streamed Stigmatized Property. Like they've been putting them out like a pretty regular clip. I'm kind of surprised to see that Umigari is in that. This is going to sound derogatory because it has mechanics. So in this game, you're playing as a fisherman in a boat on an ocean. And there's apparently been some kind of like ecological disaster because like islands are flooded. There's very little land around you. Like they're busted up windmills or whatever. And this has a pretty simple kind of loop to it where you start out on a small island. Your boat can barely go anywhere because of its fuel capacity. You're catching pufferfish, just the ones that you can see from the shore. Then you buy enough to upgrade your boat to go a little bit further, to hunt a different kind of fish, to bring back, go a little bit further, go a little bit further, that kind of thing. Your fishing is done by harpoon. You charge up a throw and then, you know, you throw, it's got a certain range to it, and then you reel it back in, which is fun to lead your shots and all
are
of
you,
that.
Are you actually doing reeling, or does it automatically pull back in?
You press a button to pull it back in.
Okay.
Yeah. But then weird shit starts showing up, at least in the course of the demo, at least in the course of the hour and 20 minutes that I played. And this is stuff that's in the trailer, and you can see like really, really big fish start showing up. Like you pick up a GPS that is linked to and you go see it, and like it's a gigantic fish that when you reel it in, you see that it has human teeth.
Oh no. God. Oh no.
The island that's visible when you start, you go to it and there's a shrine and there is a young woman in a school outfit. And you pick her up. She says, you know, says like, hey, you need to take me to, I forget where she says. And then as you're piloting your boat away, like you hear a sound and then you turn around and there's just a note left where she was.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
And the so demo. Okay.
They're sticking with like the horror elements of their previous games into this. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a little bit like Dredge where you're eventually pulling up like anomalies and stuff like that. And like really weird stuff. Like the last thing that I got to in the demo was a flooded high school, And there was a bunch of weird stuff going on, including a fish that seemingly turned into a human, or that's what that human said. And when you're navigate to a far end of this flooded high school, you see a fish that just has human legs walking around. And when you can finally like approach it, it leaps over a fence and then swims away. So I've got no idea what's going on with that. Yeah, yeah, it's got ups. So this was very slow. It took a long time for it to get anywhere. It was a long time caught up in like the survival game loop of I need to do enough of this very small annoying task to get an upgrade so I can go and do interesting stuff. Once it finally started cooking, it was cooking, and it is not so much scary as it is bizarre. Although when a gigantic fish that dwarfs your ship shows up and you harm it and it swims away, you get the paranoia, that open water feeling of like, okay, I'm looking around. Is it swimming up to attack, or is it running away, or is it continuing about its business? Right.
Is it lining me up for a bombing run here?
Yes. Is it going to eat me like a snack? Yeah. So that's about where it cut off. I think there was a little bit more to do, but I wanted to get to a couple of demos that night. That was the first one that I did.
Here's an interesting thing. So umigari is not like a proper Japanese word for anything, but it seems to be kind of a portmanteau to umi, which is sea or ocean, and then gari, which is hunting or reaping.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sea reaping is very evocative. They have, you know, obviously a word for fishing.
Yeah.
And this is not that.
No. Sea reaping.
All right, babe. I'll be back in a couple hours. I'm going to go out sea reaping.
And like, there's a certain implication that these are people who have turned into fish. Like,
we're back to the lobster again.
Kind of, yeah.
Interesting.
I'm going to be curious to play the full version of this when it comes out. I'm a little bit more interested now that I've learned that it's Chilla's art, because they make good stuff, however modest it is. And like, to see them try a game again, I'm saying this with all the love in the world, that has mechanics, is interesting.
And I just like how like surreal and like off the rails it is, because it's like all their previous stuff seemed to be pretty grounded. Like I remember the parasocial one that you talked about, where it's like,
It's like, you have a stalker. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, Dredge is a good comparison for this, but this is just like surreal Japanese Dredge.
The fact that it is first person does make it hit harder when you catch something weird. Mm. You know, when you're holding it, it's like right up in your face. And then, you know, when something gigantic shows up, I mean, things that you see in the trailers are just like, they span the horizon.
Yeah.
Like there is something really affecting about like being in first person, being dwarfed by something that could destroy you. Mm-hmm. Right.
It also looks like, from watching the trailer, that you just drop your fish in the back of the boat, and there's almost like a physics element of once you start having a bunch of fish, there's a danger of like bumping them over water and kind of chumming the water for maybe something larger.
Maybe
whether you want to or not.
It is pretty goofy. It is pretty physics-y. You know, whether or not something's going to fall out, and if you're going to have to refish it back in.
And is there a loss condition for this? Like, do you just have to go back and refuel, or you know, can you get a game over screen because you failed to manage your resource as well?
So I was curious about this. I ran out of fuel. I was like right at the border for where I could auto dock. ran out of fuel. What happens is you just respawn at the last islands that you rested at. And your boat is there. You have to get enough gas. But the boat that you had abandoned with whatever you had caught. Sorry. Sorry.
It's sea reaping. So you can say you catch.
Whatever you sea roped.
Yes.
you've got to get back to where the boat was, and then you can hop over and then transfer your fish to get there. And it's Dark Souls rules. So if you run out of fuel trying to get to where you were, then it is the original one goes away.
Those. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you're going to get caught by huge fish and that causes like a real game over, or if it's a similar, you know, respawn, get back to where you were kind of deal. You do not lose your upgrades, at least in the demo. You did not, which is important.
It seems like the game doesn't seem super interested in punishing you. Like it wants you to
see the absurd stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
It's neat, you know, modest, as far as, you know, horror games go, it's got the jank to it of being an indie horror game. But it is a fun twist on the horror fishing kind of thing, which is like weirdly that is a prevalent subgenre now. Like there's like a group co-op horror fishing game that keeps popping up in my searches when I look for new games to stream. So,
what is it? Thalassophobia is the fear of open ocean. So it's baked in to us on a human level, I think.
Yeah. Yep. So Umigari, it's neat. I am curious to see more.
Cool.
And that's all I got. The end boss. Now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I'm going to go with mine first, because something interesting has finally happened with the Game Awards.
Hey.
We waited all these years for something interesting that is not a trailer to happen.
It's not an ad?
It's not an advertisement. Somebody did not pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for us to see this.
Although it has gotten them some pretty good PR.
I mean, the developer, yeah, for sure.
Sorry, yes, that's what I meant.
Yes. So the nominees were announced. I don't care. I'm not doing that to be like, oh, I'm cooler. It just I've played so few new games this year that nothing for me. But there is a roguelike survivor like game is my impression is what this is. It's been recommended to me a bunch on Steam, called Megabonk, that was nominated for best debut indie game.
This is the skateboarding skeleton game, right?
Yeah. I think you play as a skateboarding skeleton on this. It's like a low poly, super goofy, you're just destroying a bunch of stuff kind of game. Do either of you know this? Have you played this?
Nope.
I feel like we might have talked about it at some point. It's like a, not a Metroidvania, a Vampire Survivors like auto firing game, where I guess maybe one of the characters that you play as is.
Yeah. It's one of them can be. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I feel like this might have come up even on the episode at some point, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But it's low poly, like 3D platformer style, auto shooter vampire survivors kind of deal. Really popular, incredibly successful on Steam. You know, this is the category that like Balatro got last year. I think it was nominated for this and Game of the Year or something like that. Like,
what a flex.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So it's a pretty big deal. I need to see what else was nominated for this. VGA nominations.
There were some regardless good ones for debut. There's Blueprints is in there. Okay. And Absalom is in there.
Uh-huh. Where's debut? Best debut indie game. Yeah, so Blueprints, Clair Obscur is in there.
I forgot.
Which is also nominated for game. Everything.
It's gonna sweep. It's gonna be ridiculous. But like Despelote is on there, and so is Dispatch, right? And Megabonk was included in this. And the developers said, and they're anonymous, like they don't like their actual name or identity is not out there. But they came out and said, like, hey, listen, this is really awesome. Like, it's a dream come true. It's flattering. I cannot in good conscience accept the nomination for this, because this is not the first game I've made. I've made and published stuff under other studios and pseudonyms. This is not a debut.
Yeah.
They said it's an honor and a dream. I've made games in the past under a different studio names, so Megabonk is not my debut game. And I think that is a really solid move. They could have just totally let it slide, but here you go. They're small enough to have integrity.
I think it's also something where they could have easily tried to throw shade at other, because, you know, like the Clair Obscur team, like those are people with a pedigree. The Dispatch team, we talked about how it's ex Telltale people. So, you know, there's a version of this where they use it to like climb on a soapbox and try to act like they're better than the others. But it was, it's just a, hey, here's where I'm at. And this is like, this is what I feel like the right thing is. And did make a big deal out of it, which I appreciate.
It's really effective marketing because I kind of want to be like, ah, $10. Okay. Yeah. I can fuck around with this on the Steam Deck for a while.
That, see what that was a $10 cool thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's neat. And it's not just neat because somebody decided not to participate in the Game Awards.
So I don't have a story this week, but I wanted to piggyback on the Game Awards because I did have thoughts around this, which is basically Game Awards kind of sucks now. Like the nominees for like Game of the Year, which again, it's like maybe you shouldn't turn to things like the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever to say what the best thing is and just be happy with your own opinions about it. But like, four of the six nominees for Game of the Year are sequels to games. And
Was the case last year too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess maybe a difference between last year and this year, at least in my mind, is like things like Blueprints came out where it's like, this game should get a whole bunch of recognition because this is like an incredible game with like a new genre, stuff like that. But it's like, I just don't know if it's like, this is now just a mechanism for whatever the popular opinion is or like, you know, like what's, you know, but it's like, I don't know if it's just giving the new like Call of Duty or whatever type game of the year every year. It's just like, yeah, very disappointing, I guess.
Thankfully, it is not like that low.
Yeah.
You know, to being like, Madden gets it.
Yeah. Like, I'm good if Clair Obscur wins everything, I guess. But yeah, it's like, they should probably do a better job of like recognizing the types of games that came out this year though.
And they're all kind of like blind spots, like best horror game doesn't exist. And that's fucking wild to me.
Yeah.
You know, cause like if you're going to set up a new award show, horror game, horror, anything always gets snubbed in everything.
Yeah.
Like horror games are a backbone of this industry. Just look on Twitch. Right. Mm-hmm. And to have that shit just kind of have to worm its way into other things is, you know, pretty rough. Right.
Yeah.
Same thing. There's no like best puzzle game. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It seems like glaring omissions. I will call out though. Peak is on the board for best multiplayer. Alongside like Battlefield 6 and Arc Raiders. Yeah. So like go vote for Peak. That game is fun.
However much the voting matters. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you know, I can have fun for a night watching a bunch of trailers, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it's fun to ride the hype machine a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not above it.
To try to make a claim that the Game Awards is anything greater than that, I will kind of roll my eyes at for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's it is good to see more people coming around on the opinion. I saw somebody posted on Blue Sky. It was like, they should change the name back to the Spike VGA so we know how much deference to afford this. Oh man. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about the nominees, Ben?
No, just general disappointment.
Yeah. God, the fact that, Silent Hill F got snubbed in a bunch of stuff, and I understand it not getting Game of the Year. It's a very weird game, but I clicked on it. I was like, oh my God, like it didn't even get a sound design award. No, it's just the last one. So it was below the scroll.
Again, however much that impacts the voting.
Right, right. I don't know if it's randomized or what, but Dennis, what's going on Steam?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're recording this right before the Black Friday crush, so maybe the news on that front got me, but the Steam Deck is going on sale. They've got their 256 gigabyte version 20% off for Black Friday. So that's going to bring it down to, where'd that go? It's like $320 now, something like that.
$320.
Yeah. $320, which is pretty affordable. Notably, it is now $20 cheaper than the when did the Switch come out?
The 2017, the original Switch came out. Is it $20 cheaper than the Switch?
It is now, yes, it is now $20 cheaper than the original Nintendo Switch, which is wild to think about that for a console that has its replacement on the market for probably a year now.
Yeah.
Craziness. I balked at that sentence because it's phrased as it's somehow $20 less than the portable gaming console that Nintendo released back in 2017.
Yeah.
Which is a long time ago now, but also like, it's like, wait, no, the Switch 2 didn't come out that long ago.
No.
That was the original Switch.
To do like an apples to apples comparison, the thing that matters most is that it is like so much cheaper than any of the like explicit Steam Deck competitors that are out there that are like nominally more powerful, but like how much does that actually matter for a portable, you know?
Yeah, I think it's for a niche that like takes great pride in playing something incredibly intensive in public.
Yes.
It's a purchase as a flex at that point.
Very specifically the Xbox One, the official one that Microsoft is like, yeah, this is the portable Xbox. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. Just go get whatever, call whatever you want an Xbox. Mommy needs a minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is cool to see. I love my Steam Deck. It is one game at a time that I'm like addicted to, and then I'll switch over. I don't really cycle around that much. Mm-hmm. So 256 gigabytes is more than enough.
Yeah.
But also the big thing here is like, you know, Nintendo has your Mario's. But what you want in a handheld console is just variety and options. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get that on the Steam Deck better than you are anywhere else.
Yeah.
We should clarify, we are not sponsored by the Steam Deck.
I was going to say, like, if you know about the Steam Deck, if you want a Steam Deck, you either have one or you have noticed this.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that the more newsworthy part of this, aside from like the comparative, compared to the Xbox handheld or whatever, I don't know. We had all those big Steam announcements last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. And no Steam Deck successor, and like the Steam Decks that are out now, excepting like the OLED, like these are coming up on like 3 years old now, something like that.
See, I'm okay with that. Again, if you're getting a Steam Deck, you don't want the top of the line, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let it breathe, please.
Yeah. Don't
try to get me on a treadmill.
Yeah. No, I don't want to be buying another $400, $500 handheld every 2 years. That would be fucking ridiculous. I just think that like after a certain point, you end up in the, people being conservative about buying them because of the upgrade cycle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like when is the pro version of this coming out?
And people start getting antsy, or the Steam Deck 2 or whatever, right?
Yep. So if you've been looking to pick one up, it's a good time. If you've been looking to dunk on Nintendo's pricing strategy, they're laughing at you. They're laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
But.
Yep. Switch 2's already outsold the Wii U.
Is there?
I have no way to gauge.
Sorry. I heard Wii and started reacting like, that's impossible. There's no way.
That is impossible.
And then I heard you and I was like, ah.
Yeah,
I see where she was going with it. Okay. Yeah.
Oh gosh, that's so. Ben, you said you didn't have a story.
No.
Okay, that is just fine. I think we're gonna call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, people. We're thankful for you.
How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button this bad boy. Thankfully.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 566. We appreciate you taking the time. Going to remind you that Duckstream is coming up December the 12th through the 14th, 48 hours of live streaming to benefit Point of Pride, an organization that provides direct material assistance to trans people seeking life-saving medical care. Follow us on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. Subscribe to Patreon, even as a free member, to get the updates, with information about that. Those posts will be going up here shortly, with the t-shirt design. Once I design the t-shirt, Ben, you are wearing the t-shirt for last year's event right now.
It was a banger. You got, Kismet. Not that you're trying to top it, but get your work cut out for you.
Yeah. Every year it's hard because I've like used up all of the design cliches that I know.
I mean, have you gone long enough that you can do retro?
That can just do like a reissue. My pride will not let me. Honestly, what we probably ought to do is like look for an artist, like an actual artist who can do a design. I would, if the network is going to spend the money, I would rather just give directly to the cause. Even if ultimately the new design would result in more, it's ridiculous the way the mind works around that. Regardless.
Clearly you've gotten us some pretty good designs. So
yes.
Find any joy in it. Keep going.
Thank you. So there's that again, December 12th through the 14th. You know what to do to help this show? Subscribe, leave a rating or review, iTunes. Here's a thing. I get tons of shitty transphobic comments and reviews now. If you have kind things to say, please do it.
Yeah, word.
Yeah. I expected it. It took a little bit longer for it to come in, but people are shitty. So try and counterbalance it. I appreciate it. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I've been Kay.
I was going to say, looking forward, I'm bad at calendaring. Will we have an episode next week?
Yeah,
that'll be far enough past. Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. We're kind of bracketing Thanksgiving nicely here.
So. Yes, we are. Cool. Yes, I will have the toady list put together for you, Dennis.
Yay.
Yeah. I've been Kay. You can follow me on Blue Sky at k.zone.
I've been Dennis. You can follow me on Blue Sky at furia.games.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Those reviews or the comments on Spotify specifically, a couple of people have called me the F slur, and it's like, you guys don't understand this at all.
Yeah. Yeah. You're still living in 90s hatred.
Yeah.
I didn't know what platform it was on, but in retrospect, I should have known.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I normally don't look, but I just, I popped in because of admin work that I was doing, and it's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. That's shitty. That's like, over the years, I've been so happy that with this corner of the internet that DuckFeed's on, that it's like not that type of people, you know?
It's so easy to forget. It's so easy to forget that the people by and large struggle to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have one. You need someone with dignity.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Who else has titles?
I have one. Two.
Oh. Ben, what's the one you have?
I have pitch problem.
Okay. Dennis, you have two.
I have two. The first one is that fish got ups. as well as 10 bucks cool.
Okay. So we have a bunch. Does anybody want to make an impassioned plea for any one of these?
I really like the double entendre of pitch problem.
Yeah. Pitch problem is probably the way to go.
It's excellent. Yeah. Excellent wordplay there, sir. Mm.
I was trying to think of a yaw pun, but there's nothing. there's nothing in singing or in music that applies to yaw. So
no, yaw bass is the like wah 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 wah.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing I think of is roll. Like you're just like, oh, you sing if you're singing, you roll. But yeah, nothing. Cannot. No flight terms. I do not. My brain is too slow to draw those comparisons.
Sing it in canon.
Something. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah, pitch problem. I think is the way to go.
We'll be kicking ourselves for other ways we could have gone for the rest of the week. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Time to go play Kerbal Space Program.
It is decided.